The Surgeon General has determined that smoking causes lung cancer, heart disease, and emphysema.
I only smoke when I drink. I only drink when I breathe. I only lie when I talk. I only give when I receive. I only started smoking. It was late last year. And it's only because it goes down well with a beer. Yeah. Ice cold beer. Ice cold beer, yeah. Well, you know it causes cancer. It's not the answer. Don't take the chance, yeah. But you know it's not entirely true. I'm sure that some of you will live to 102. And you can't even smoke inside, not even at the bars. I only smoke when I drink. I only drink when I breathe. I only lie when I talk. I only give when I receive. I only started smoking. It was late last year. And it's only because it goes down well with a beer. Yeah. An ice cold brewski. Well, you know, my mother would always say, excessive smoking will take your life away. But Bomb George Burns smoked like a chimney, and still he lived to 103. But Ma, if it makes you feel alright, I'm only smoking Camel Ultralight. I only smoke when I drink. I only drink when I breathe. I only lie when I talk. I only give when I receive. I only started smoking. It was late last year. And it's only because it goes down well with a beer. Yeah. Ice cold beer, yeah. Straight from the cooler. Here comes the lead break and I'm all set to have another cigarette.
Oh, yeah. Nothing better than that good cigarette. Nice Corona Light with lime. Oh, sitting on the beach, staring at the babes, I mean the water. Sorry, honey.
Hey, kids, you should never smoke. It's gonna make you choke and it'll stunt your growth. That is why I will be your friend. Then I will tell you again that your life might end. And it will make your lungs brown, and that'll make you frown. I only smoke when I drink. I only drink when I breathe. I only lie when I talk. I only give when I receive. I only started smoking. It was late last year. And it's only because it goes down so well with a beer. I only smoke when I drink. I only drink when I breathe. I only lie when I talk. I only give when I receive. I only started smoking, man. It was late last year. And it's only because it goes down so well with a beer. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah.
Alrighty, welcome to the Stuttering John podcast, Beer on the Balcony edition. Skål! I'm glad you all can make it. Let me say hi to everybody here. We got Peggy Malloy, Cranberuni, Maria McDermott, Emergency Remedial Truth, Robert Myers, Leslie Ramsden, Mark P., Kenneth Otto, Emergency Remedial Truth. He's very happy, but my guest, there's a link if you want to donate, paypal.me/JohnMelendezInc. Emergency Remedial Truth. Larry the Cable Guy today. Cool. He cracks me up. He cracks everybody up. He's awesome. Stage Dog, Frankie Smith. And there we have it. And now, without further ado, I really want to thank this guest for coming on. I mean, I know he's got a busy schedule, which is why we're doing it on a Tuesday. But it's all good, and I'm grateful to have someone as funny as Dan, a.k.a. Larry the Cable Guy, on. So without further ado, I see you just ate something, Dan, so I'll wait till you swallow. Okay. Hold on a second. All right. Are you ready, Dan? Yeah, hold on. I'm going to give him a second to finish chewing. Oh, wait. Dan?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. I'm good.
Could you hear me?
Yeah.
How are you, pal?
No, I wasn't eating. I put a big dip in. A big dip.
Oh, I didn't know you chewed.
Man, I've been chewing for a long time. You should know that.
Does that help with the accent?
A little bit. Does a little bit, but it helps. It helps lay off the sugar. That's what it helps do.
So it's been a long time, Dan. And I know that, I know you're busy. So first thing I want to say is thank you so much, man.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I'm new to this whole, I'm not very technical when it comes to this stuff. And I didn't know if I was supposed to have my microphone or if I talk with this, but you can hear me good, right?
I hear you fine.
Yeah, but it said, I was so frustrated. I was about to punch some because everybody's different. I figured out Zoom. I can do Zoom. I'm a pro now on Zoom. And then I said, well, tell John I'll do it on Tuesday. I'll pop in there. I got home about 20 minutes ago. And then I look and it says stream something.
I got to go.
I'm like, what in the hell is StreamYard? Now I got to download. So I just got this new computer. So I download Chrome. Then I go on StreamYard. Then it says it can't operate StreamYard without Chrome. And I just downloaded Chrome. And I'm going through this whole thing. I email my manager. I go, this is not letting me go. Oh, Johnny, I was getting so daggum frustrated. I was about to say, tell Johnny I love him and I'll do his show, but I ain't doing it unless you get Zoom because I can't figure out StreamYard. And then the last minute, StreamYard popped on. I was like, hey, I got it. All right, we're good to go. We are good to go.
Hey, Dan, try and keep yourself centered to the camera because you're moving on off to your left.
I know. I bounce around a lot when I talk.
So I got to ask you first, how's your wife and kids?
Man, good. They're getting big. My little boy, because he's been little forever. He's 16 now. My daughter's 14.
Oh, my God.
My wife just turned 21. So it's...
You have a gorgeous wife and a cool as shit wife, man.
Yeah, Kara's awesome. I was definitely blessed and lucked out with her, man. She's fantastic. Beautiful and just, loves everything that I like. She's not, I always go golfing and there's always some guy bitching about his wife or I don't know. I got to call home my wife. I'm just going to let, she doesn't want me to. And I go, man, my wife literally lets me golf every day. And my wife is a homebody. She never wants to go anywhere. So, which I don't mind either because I traveled forever. So, I'll go golf all day, like a regular job. I'll leave the house at 9 o'clock. I'll come home at 5:15, like it's a job, right? And we have dinner and we both sit on the couch and watch TV. And I mean, it's like the most boring life, but it's the greatest thing ever. And she's awesome. We like the same stuff. And I don't think we've ever yelled at each other except maybe one time, you know. But the thing that helps there, John, is, as you know, she's Chinese, so I don't understand anything she says. So that tends to help when you really can't understand it. Now, her interpreter and I get along really well.
But that was going to be my next question is, because I asked Jay Leno this on this show, and you know, I've asked a lot of people. Let me ask you again. I'm sure I've asked you before, but how do you stay happy? I mean, how many years have you been married?
I've been married, 2005, 17 years.
How do you keep it successful?
Well, we never go to bed angry. You know what? We get along. I didn't marry somebody that I didn't get along with. You know, the three main things that I think is you have to get along politically, you have to get along sexually, and you have to get along spiritually. If you have those three things together, it's going to be successful, you know. My wife writes, she's written 4 best-selling Christian books. She's an author, and, you know, we just keep things in perspective. You know, we don't, we're both are Christians, Johnny, as you know. And, we just try to do what we're told to do. And I love my wife and she loves me, and we never go to bed angry. We never fight about stuff that doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
That's important.
We always, whenever something bad happens or we're going through a struggle, the first thing we do is we look around us at how many blessings we do have and how many wonderful things that we do have and how it could be worse, how we could have it different. And so we just take things in perspective and we count our blessings and we move on. So that's how we get along. I mean, that's those three things are important, though. I mean, okay, how many people get divorced because they don't get along politically? A lot of them, you know, they're mad at them or this or that, especially nowadays. I mean, people treat politics like a religion, and it's you know. So, no, I think those three things are pretty important.
But then, like, and, you know, this might be a little personal, but, you know, at the end of my marriage, I was married 13 years, and, you know, there was no sex anymore. So how do you keep the sex life exciting?
Pornography. I find that pornography and a lot, and wigs and costumes. I think that's
wigs and what?
Wigs and costumes. A lot of role playing. I was George Washington last night. I crawled up the apple tree. Next thing I know, boom, boom, bam. No, you know, I hear you. I hear what you're saying. But I'll be honest. My wife to me is very sexy.
She is.
She knows what I like. I know what she likes. That's why I said you gotta be in tune sexually. You know, and she turns me on. I think my wife turns me on. She's beautiful. And I think the older she gets, the prettier she gets to me. I don't know. It's just something about it. But she's,
You know what I loved about her, Dan?
I don't have much of a problem with that. I was kidding about the other thing, obviously. But I don't have much of a problem with that.
You know what I loved about it, Dan, is that even when I met her, like, you know, at the Tonight Show, she was so down to earth and cool. Like, you know, it wasn't like, hey, I'm Larry the Cable Guy's wife. It was just more like, I'm just a normal girl, man.
She's not, here's the thing, John. She's not impressed with anything.
Yes.
My wife is like, honestly, she's like Kramer. She's like Kramer. I mean, if you have a friend and they're self-conscious about something, and you always tell them, well, just don't be so, you know. But if you want, let's put it this way, if you want an honest answer to something, go to her. You know, remember when Kramer was like, oh, yeah, she's really nice. Her nose needs fixing. But other than that, I mean, that's what Kara's like. Kara will flat out tell you. I mean, she'll tell you what she thinks. I mean, you want honesty, you want truth. She is all honesty. She's all about being honest. And I mean, she's not going to hurt anybody's feelings. She's smart. But I mean, but she's just not impressed with anything. You know, she has her perspectives in order. You know, we got a family. I mean, that's very important, obviously. But we were laughing about it the other day because I told her we got invited to go down to Branson. I got invited to go down to Branson. They asked Kara if she wanted to come, and everything was taken care of. The guy was going to fly us down, stay in this nice hotel there in Branson, top of the rock. And there's a lot of stuff she likes down there. They got a bunch of museums that she likes, and she loves that stuff. And I could play golf. So she was like, well, so she had to think about it, you know? And I told her, I said, you know, it's really funny. I go, literally, George Strait could be in town giving a concert at the stadium. And George Strait could literally call me up and say, hey, Dan, after the concert, me and my wife would love to get together with you and Kara, just have a meal together. I haven't seen you in a while. And let's go grab some food. And my wife would go, oh, how long is it going to take? You know, I mean, totally not impressed by it. She just wants to hurry. Okay, well, if it doesn't take me both to the house too long, I guess I'll go.
That's hysterical.
She's awesome. And, you know, and you're right. She's cool. She writes, she's written me some funny jokes. You know, anytime I do a joke and a woman will boo at it, I'll go, well, my wife wrote that. So,
oh, I love it.
I mean, the most, and it's not like, I mean, she wrote a joke for me one time that I've never done on stage because I find it too disgusting.
What is it?
She said, you know, and this is, I think this is true in a lot of marriages. She said, you know, when we were first married, you would leave a little stain in your underwear. And you were so embarrassed about it that I would find them wadded up in the trash can somewhere because you didn't want me to see it. She goes, now here we are 15 years later. You're basically taking a shit in them and throwing them in the hamper. I know it's disgusting. I said, honey, that is so funny, but it's really disgusting. And I do not do that. She goes, yeah, you know, no, I know. But, you know, that's just comes with marriage. You know? When you're married a long time, after a while, it's just like, whatever, you know. She's very cool. And
where do you live, Lep?
She's a normal human being, you know.
Huh? Where are you living now, Dan?
I live in Nebraska.
Oh, that's right. Because I saw you on that, I guess, sports show and you wiped out a little bit.
Yeah,
oh, you bald?
I shaved my head.
Why?
I'm not bald at all. I shaved my head, Johnny, because it was coming down over my ears and I was getting it down back in here. And I said, well, I'm going somewhere. It looks, I'm almost scruffy, but I got my, it's coming over my ears. So I took my razor that I trimmed my beard up with, and I tried to cut my hair with a beard razor. And so I literally had like the sides. I had all of this shaved completely off, and then everything else was hair. And I walked downstairs, and I go, hey, does this look okay? And my wife goes, oh, my gosh. You know what? Now you got to start over because your hair looks horrible. So she took the dog trimmers where she trims the dog hair. And she just shaved my head with the dog trimmer. So I'm starting from scratch. So that's why my head looks like this.
Yeah, I actually just got my, you know, I just got a crew cut.
Yeah, you know what? It's, I wear a hat all the time. So it's like, who cares what my hair looks like? I wear a hat all the time. I, as long as it's not coming down over my ears, I'm a happy camper.
So what happened with that? You slipping, you know, you know that, like, I guess you're holding like a plate of food and then you're bringing it out to the table and then you slip.
On the sports show?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know how, you know, it's crazy how this goes. So I said, yeah, I'll come down and I'll do the pregame there on Saturday. That'll be fun. You know, I know the guys, so it'd be fun to go down there. Tim Brando's a good buddy of mine. He called him up and set it up for me to go down there. Well, you know how it is. You know, I've got these jokes prepared in my head to say right when I get up there. Yeah. And they tell me, and it's hectic down there. All these kids are screaming. And they tell me right away, hey, the floor is really slick. So be careful when you go up there because it's like an ice rink. So be careful. I said, okay. So now I've got three jokes I want to do. And also I'm remembering, be careful. So that's about my capacity for learning. All right. That I know. I know what I'm going to say and be safe. Well, just before I walk up there, oh, and then the guy goes, hey, they might give you a Husker hat to put on coach over there.
Yeah.
I said, okay. So before you go up, they're going to hand you a hat. I said, okay. So now I've got three jokes lined up. On top of that, I'm remembering, don't slip. Now I got to remember the hat. Here's the hat. So I get up there and they hand me a plate of food. Out of nowhere. You know, it's like John, you know, it's like everybody, oh, he's a comedian. He'll figure something out. You know, you're going on national TV and they just hand you a prop 15 seconds before you got to go. Now, all of a sudden, you know, they think I'm Jonathan Winters going into the closet and I can, you know, pound out all these one-liners. So now they hand me that and I'm like going, isn't there a hat? Were they going to give me a hat? She goes, and she's going, go, you got to go, you got to go, got to go. And I'm like, well, all right. So now I'm thinking, what kind of a joke am I going to say bringing all these people a plate of food? I don't even know what's in it. I see some corn cobs in there, some corn and some looks like nuggets. So now I'm trying to think of a food joke. I got 8 seconds to pop out. Why am I carrying this food? Well, of course, I've already got three jokes I wanted to do. Now those are whisked away because I'm thinking of something else last minute.
You just said, you know, I didn't finish my lunch. You guys want some?
Well, absolutely. So they hand me that. So now I've forgotten the opening jokes. Well, as I throw them out, trying to think of something else, I also threw out the part about be careful, the floor is slick. So that also left my mind. And well, I went up there, I gave them the food. I made a turn to go to the thing and my foot went out from under me and I felt like, oh man, what is going on? And but no, I didn't fall. I almost fell, but I almost ate it. And then it turned out good because then I'm going, Oklahoma's trying to kill me. I knew it. They're trying to kill the cable guy.
Yeah. Who is?
Oklahoma's trying to kill me. They're trying to kill the cable guy.
And then you guys lost big time that game, right?
Oh, Johnny, I don't even want to talk about it. Nebraska football. After we've been down for 20 years, let me see, 2000, yeah, I would say it was, so it's 20, 22. We've been down for a long time, let's put it that way. And it's just, and we're still one of the top seven winningest college football teams in history. Can you imagine if we still were, had remained good the last 15 years, we would be untouchable as the best college football team of all time. But it's really sad when you're that, when you were Alabama. Nebraska was Alabama in the 90s.
Yeah.
We lost three games. We were we were 63-3 in the mid 90s and beyond.
Wow.
And it was just, I mean, it's really sad. We, Nebraska's, something's happened. And
that's the only sport you really got in Nebraska, right?
No, we're awesome in volleyball.
Oh.
Nebraska's volleyball team is traditionally one of the best volleyball teams in the nation every year. But we have, we don't, you know what? We tried to organize a cornhole team, but we didn't have enough interest. But just all sports. We were so good in everything. We were good in baseball and football and track. And it's just all gone downhill. And I don't know what it is. Hopefully they'll get it back. Volleyball's good because we got a Tom Osborne of volleyball coaches who's been there forever. And I sound like a Valley Girl there. He's been there forever. And so, you know, he does it the way he wants to do it. Nobody can interfere with it. So I don't know. It's a sad state of affairs. Hopefully they'll get it back. But yeah, we got beat. Move on.
Tell me about it. My Giants lost to the Cowboys last night, and my Yankees lost to the Blue Jays. I hear you.
You know what's crazy? My nephew, his wife, her brother kicks for the Cowboys, Brett Maher.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I see that kid all the time. And you know what's even crazier? When I went to a football game a long time ago at Centennial High School in Nebraska, my nephew was playing. And his friend, Brett Maher, was the kicker and the quarterback. And we went down, and it was really crowded. So we went down and just stood in the end zone. You know, there was nobody down there. And they came in and goes, Brett Maher about to attempt a 54-yard field goal. And I go, I looked at my wife and I go, wait a minute. A high school kid's going to kick a 54-yard field goal? You got to be kidding me. And I'm down there, right? We're down there by the goalpost. Dude, he cleared it by 10 yards.
Wow.
And I said, I looked at my wife and I said, man, that kid is going to kick in the NFL. That's unbelievable. And sure enough, he's in right now. He's already got his name in the Hall of Fame for kicking two field goals over 60 yards in one game.
Holy shit.
Yeah, he's a good field goal kicker. I guess he was with them before and got let go. I guess his accuracy was a little off, and he missed a couple of kicks they needed. But, man, they got him back. He's doing really good right now.
And how do you know him?
He's my nephew's wife's brother. So it's kind of a distant thing there. But
I know, I always get confused with that shit.
But here's the thing, John. If you want him on the show, call him. Enough about Brett Maher. This is about me. This
Do
is
your kids play any sports, Dan?
No, my kids do not play any sports. And I always wanted my kids, you know, I wanted my boy to be a great baseball player. But they don't play sports. They're not interested in sports. They could care less about sports. But I guess the good thing about that is I don't have to drive all over the country.
Tell me about it.
You know, going to stupid games on a Saturday when I could be home. I got a buddy of mine. He's got five kids. All of them are different ages, and they're all in different sports.
Yep.
And he spends his entire life driving from game to game to game to game. So actually, I'm kind of happy that my kids don't play sports. But I will say, though, my boy, was a good baseball player when he was little. I mean, we're talking little, you know, T-ball and stuff. But when I used to pitch that kid, he could hit a wiffle ball like nobody's business.
Yeah.
And then when he went out for T-ball, man, he's whacking that thing off the tee. And so when most kids, you know, they would throw underhand pitches or, you know, I would just throw a regular pitch, not a fastball, but I threw it fast. I threw it like, and he would whack him. And he was good. He was a good, he had great hand-eye coordination. And then he really started liking baseball because he could do it good. He had confidence.
Yeah.
Well, his first day at coach pitch, he's a little guy. So first of all, his friend ended up not going with him. So now he doesn't know anybody. So now he's kind of shy, and he's the smallest kid there. And I'm watching the coach do coach pitch, and they're going up to hit. And I'm like going, oh, man, this is awesome. Because my kid, I've been throwing those pitches to my kid since he was 3 years old. He can hit these pitches. So I'm stoked. He gets up there, And the coach sees how little he is. And and instead of throwing just down the middle like he was throwing the other kids, he's throwing these gigantic Ephus pitches. Like they're slow, like he can't hit it unless it's really slow. And, of course, he swung and whiffed because he's trying to hit an Ephus pitch coming at him. And yeah. he got it. And so after about 8 swings and misses, they went and got the tee and put it on a tee for him. And he was the only one that had to use a tee. And then that was it. He lost confidence and he didn't want to play baseball.
That's so sad.
Well, and that was the end of his sports. And I tell you, that coach to this day pissed me off because my kid could have been really good at baseball.
Yeah.
I tried to get him back into it, but he didn't want to play after that.
You know, it's my youngest son also was in the little league and he was small too. And I know that experience. Oddly enough, my son played Little League with Rainn Wilson's kid from The Office.
Wow, no kidding. That's pretty crazy. Yeah, I guess out there you get to play with a lot of celebrity kids.
But it's so funny, Larry.
You all right? You gonna make it?
Yeah, yeah. My son was in like left field, Rainn Wilson's in center. My son's pretending to shoot bow and arrows. Rainn Wilson's kids just look at the clouds. A ball's hit to them, and they both just don't even fucking see or care about it.
You know, that's so funny because when my kid played Little League football, he played football too, but they had to be quarterback one time. He was running back a couple times because he's fast. Then they had to be quarterback. He was quarterback for one series, and he got the ball, they get in the stance. He's about to get behind the quarterback. He turns around and he points up there and goes, "Hey, look at that plane! Look at that plane!" I know you learn early on. You buy these kids a nice glove, and you get it all oiled up and ready to go. You're excited about your kid playing ball, and then you notice he's in the outfield, and the glove, they end up collecting plants, rocks. You know, they come back to the dugout. "Hey, look at this rock I found. Look at the plant. I got a caterpillar." But Little League's always fun.
So, Dan, I'd love to get your perspective on it. Why so many questions? As a comic, when Chris Rock made that joke at the Academy Awards and Will Smith comes up and punches him, slaps him.
Right.
Now, you are a comic that will go out on a limb, you're not exactly always PC or whatever, but I don't think with Chris Rock, how do you feel about that?
I think that if he was offended by it, he should have waited till after the show and went backstage and asked him why he did that joke, if he was offended at the joke. But I think most people know if you're going to get Chris Rock or if you're going to get a comic to do that, those usually turn into some kind of a roast. They always make fun of this guy.
Yes.
Or this guy. And it's funny. You move on. I think that we live in a world that's a little too sensitive and people need to get a sense of humor. If you don't want jokes, at the thing, then don't hire a comedian to do jokes.
Perfect.
And you know what Chris Rock's going to do? He's going to do that. Plus, from what I understand, they were friends anyway, or they used to be friends. It was totally uncalled for, totally ridiculous. I think what's happening in the comedy world sometimes gets a little ridiculous. I think, though, if you've noticed the comics, though, that double down and say, "We're not going to buy into the wokeism and we're going to do our jokes. And if you don't like it, don't come to my show. I'm just doing the jokes." You notice that those comics are doubling their audiences. People want to just go and have fun and laugh. That's all that they want to do. It's always, I've just always been on a thing. Under the opinion.
We're not politicians. We're comedians.
Right.
You know what I mean? So if we're on stage, you know.
No, we're not politicians. We can have opinions on politics. There's nothing that we're not elected officials, so it doesn't matter what we think. That's what I mean.
It's at a comedy club. You come to see comedy.
Exactly. And I will say this, though. I think it's kind of problematic sometimes when you have comedians that want to talk politics, and they want their whole show to be politics, and they're trying to make points with their politics. And you're going to them, and then all of a sudden they get in trouble for a political stance they're taking, or they said something as a funny, and then they get in trouble for it. And then they go, hey, I'm just a comedian. I am a comedian. Well, no, not really, because that's what you do. You've been going around and you're going to rallies and you're actually acting like a politician, but you're a comedian as well. I think sometimes they can use that as a crutch. And if they say something that was offensive, they always go, well, I'm just a comedian. When really they haven't been acting like just a comedian, it really acts like that they're involved and they're, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of like a politician. I mean, when I do political stuff, I just try to make sure it's funny and move on, you know?
Yeah, I don't do any politics because it alienates half the crowd.
Well, I quit doing it on the internet. It doesn't help you any. I mean, I used to bitch about every now and then something would just get to your crawl and you think that you're going to change the world. You're not doing anything. When you're going on the internet and doing that, you're basically just dividing the country even more. People that like you are already going to like you. People that hate you are already going to hate you. You're not going to change anybody's mind on a Twitter message. So it's like, I just quit doing that. It's like, you know what? I'm just going to be funny. I'm going to send out jokes. People.
Are you a social media guy, Dan?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I enjoy it. I enjoy communicating with the fans and sending out jokes and getting responses and seeing if they like certain jokes, what jokes they don't like. I like doing that. And like I said, I used to like get pissed off and send something out. Every now and then I'll retweet something that I agree with that I think is so ridiculous. But it's like, you know, Tim Allen sent a thing out a while back about Joe Biden was on 60 Minutes. And he asked how long the show was, and which is a stupid joke. It's funny.
Yeah.
But you know, he didn't do anything but get blasted with. I remember when you were funny. I remember when you were a comedian. All that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, if somebody would have sent that about Trump, the whole internet would have thought it was the funniest joke in the world. You know, and that's why I say, Johnny, politics, people that make politics their religion are the most dangerous people out there. Because when you do a joke, a political joke that's on about them, you've almost blasphemed one of their gods. And
you almost what?
You've blasphemed one of their gods. Okay, because politics is a religion to a lot of people. And so when you say something negative about their religion, I mean, they treat it like you've just blasphemed my religion, and they get bent out of shape. And so that's why I never treat politics like a religion. You know, as a citizen, I can go vote. That's all about all I can do. If I really believe in something somebody's doing and they want me to come down to a fundraiser and do some jokes, I'll help out and go do it. But you know, politics definitely isn't a religion for me, and I try to stay away from it on stage. I just want to make people laugh. That's my
job. I know.
It's my life.
You know, and you do. Dan, I gotta ask you because I'm fucking. What's that W on your chair?
Huh?
On your chair is a W.
Yeah, my last name, Whitney. Hello, Johnny. Hello, McFly.
Well, good. That brings me to ask you, because I never know if I should call you Dan or Larry. And I get,
you know what, Dan, Larry, it's all the same. I've been called Larry for so long. It's kind of like a nickname. You know how that goes. It's just like a nickname. You know.
I mean, you're stuttering fucking John, for Christ's sake.
I know, but see, but people know you as that. I mean, I don't think that's a bad thing. That's just, you know, you find ways in life and you do a job and you want to be successful at it. Of all things, you want to make a living at it. But if that's what helped you get successful, then, you know, embrace it. I mean, I'm glad that I created Larry the Cable Guy a long time ago. It was fun. I still enjoy it. And it's fun. And I love writing for it. And I love doing the jokes. And it's fun. I don't care. Let me tell you something. It's like Carrot Top. People always make fun of Scotty. He's one of the nicest human
beings. I love Scotty.
He's super sweet. Yep. And he's one of the best in the world at what he does.
Yes.
You may not like it. You may not think it's real comedy. You might not, whatever, you know. But all those people that bash him, there's not one person in the world that wouldn't trade their crappy career for his career in a second. So exactly. Most of that is just jealousy. And, you know, it's just so stupid. You know, if more people concentrated on doing what they should be doing and concentrating on working hard with their careers and not everybody else's, then they can be successful too. But they're so busy tearing successful people down, they're not building themselves up. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Dan, I've said that a lot of times because Carrot Top he does an entertaining show. People are laughing. People are paying and having a great time. Who the fuck gives a... It's like, you know, it's like, it drives me crazy, and you know, because, and Scott's the nicest fucking guy, and he fucking came up with this niche.
Yeah.
He's the only one. He's the best at it.
Absolutely. So we always stick up for him and give him props. But going back to the comedy thing, it's like, people really go out of their way now just so they can be offended, and
yep,
they feel like it's a noble service or something. And I've always thought a long time ago, you know, there's comedians I like, comedians I don't think are funny, comedians I do, but comedy is hard. Developing a following, developing an audience to be able to sell tickets and sell out comedy clubs and theaters, that's hard. And regardless if I agree with what they're talking about, regardless if that's their job, your job is to find an audience or have an audience find you that has the same sense of humor that you have, and they pay their hard-earned money to come laugh and have a good night out. And if you don't like a particular comedian and you're offended by him, then don't go see the guy. Don't go see the girl. Don't do it. Then they're out of your life and you don't have to worry about it. But it's just, it's unbelievable. You know,
hey, Dan, is that your phone that keeps...
Yeah, and I don't know. That's not my phone. It's my
computer. It's on your computer.
Yeah,
I get that too. I have the same fucking thing. You gotta turn it off, but don't
worry. I'm not technical enough to figure out how to turn
it off.
Don't
worry about it.
It's Letterman. He's been bugging me for an interview forever. That's like the fifth time he's done it.
All right, Dan, now let me ask you, because I actually did have some because it's so easy to chew the shit with you. That's why I told Maggie.
Oh, yeah. Like,
you know, we're just going to talk about life, love, and comedy. I don't have any.
Absolutely. We had some fun, John.
I feel like you're my friend. I mean, it's just, you know, I've always been very comfortable with you.
Oh, my gosh. We had a good time on The Tonight Show. Every time I went out there with my wife or my kids, and you were always so nice and friendly, made everybody comfortable. And those were some of the greatest times of my life. I'm sure they were yours as well.
Yeah.
But those Tonight Show years, I really enjoyed them.
And you were so good. I know I've said this before, but you were so good that you did fucking four nights straight during the strike. And I think for me and everybody on the show and Jay, I know for Debbie Vickers, that meant so much and shows how cool of a dude you are.
Well, it was really fun, and the only struggle with that whole thing was trying to make sure we had enough stuff and material to go. So, I mean, I was pulling out all the stops. That's the time I brought the Braille Playboy magazine that Ronnie Hill.
Yeah.
And we did, but we turned that into a 10-minute bit. It was awesome. So that was such a fun time. And everybody was so nice to me, and they had the big balloons up and the congratulations. And I think, correct me if I'm mistaken, but I think I'm the only stand-up comic in the history of the Tonight Show that did four nights in a row.
I think you're, yes, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, I think so. But it was sure fun. We had a good time on there.
Do your kids now, well, they must now, when they were younger, like, when did they start to discover, holy shit, my dad's famous?
You know what? Here's the hard thing about my kids. And if I was a kid growing up, it would be hard for me too. They don't know anything else. They didn't really realize I was famous until they started going to school. And all the kids were talking about the Cars movies and how much they love Mater. Then they started going, man, that's kind of cool now. You know, I was always just dad. You know, I was just dad, and that was my job. And it was like any other regular job. And I remember one time, you know, because my kids grew up literally on a tour bus. And so I remember when they were just about 5 years old, they were with our neighbor's kids, and we were about to go somewhere. And I know that my boy wanted their friend and their parents to come too. And he said, well, maybe you guys can go too. Just get in your bus too and come. So he thought they had a bus too. He thought everybody had, like, that's how they traveled. You know, it's like, no, that's not how it works, buddy. Not everybody's got a tour bus, but you know, they just grew up with it, and they didn't really realize anything special about anything that I was doing until they got older and started hanging out with kids that were really impressed that their dad was Mater. Certain movies.
Dan, I'm sorry for cutting you off, but you know, on the side, I substitute teach here. You know why? Because LA needed teachers bad.
Right.
I'm qualified, and I took them. And you know, and I said to them, because they looked me up. As soon as I'm there, you know, they Google, you're famous, you know, whatever. And right. But you know, I said, hey, you know who I'm having on the show next week? Larry the Cable Guy, you know who that is now? I go, the voice of Mater from Cars? This is like sixth grade kids. Oh, get the hell out of here.
Right.
That's got to be cool for you, because adults love you, and now kids in the Disney universe love you.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing, you know. It came along at the right time, because Cars came out right when my boy was born. And so, yeah, that's a whole generation of kids that can enjoy my stuff. It's I'm really at the age where I've got a pretty wide range of fans, especially with the Mater stuff. Now, Blue Collar, you know, I started getting really popular around 1998. And then nationally around 2002, 2001. So you figure anybody that's probably 25 and up, you know, anybody 25 and up knows pretty much. Some people know me from the Blue Collar stuff in my comedy. And then the younger they get, they know me from the Mater stuff. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool deal. You know, it's pretty neat. You know, you always... Not me as much, because I'm really family oriented, and I've always said if this ended tomorrow, I would be completely content and happy. I'm not one of those people that says, well, I'm going to retire, and then I come back out of retirement. I just can't quit. I can't. I mean, I'm not, I really am not, I'm not really anxious to be in the limelight all the time. Like, some people can't survive unless they're on stage or behind a camera. Their existence is all about the stage and camera.
Yeah.
That's why you see some people working all the way up until their 80s and late 70s. And
yeah.
I don't want to do that. I want to enjoy my life. And so I'm not like that. And that's pretty cool. You know, I work when I want to work, and I'll take gigs I want to take, stuff that I don't want to take, but I'm very family oriented.
Yeah.
And so I don't worry about one day nobody's going to even know anything about what you did. Well, that's not going to happen for a while, because I've got so many multi-generational people that know the stuff that I do. But there's some people, you know, like you take those stars from the 60s and 70s, you know, all of their fans are older now.
Yeah.
You know, you can't find a lot of people 45 and under that are paying to go see, you know, one of those obscure bands from the 60s that had two hits.
No,
they're going to sell. Yeah, they're going to sell to their crowd, which is thinning out. But the cool thing about just my career is it just expanded over such a long period of time, and with different projects for all age groups. So I've been very blessed to be able to do all those different projects.
It's awesome. Do you ever, when your kids were growing up, did you ever break into the Larry Cable Guy character?
All the time. Well, you know, when I was living in Florida, it was a lot easier to get into character, because all my buddies, that's all we did was go to country bars. And, you know, they're all my buddies are from Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Texas. But then when I moved to Nebraska, you know, the longer I'm here, the more it wears off. But the thing that I find that's interesting about that is the minute I meet somebody that's from my neck of the woods down there, I just pop right back into the accent. I don't even sometimes realize I'm doing it, because I lived in Florida for 34 years.
What part?
I lived in, when I first moved down there and did comedy, I lived for 16 years in West Palm Beach.
Oh, okay.
And then, of course, we're talking late 70s, 80s, in the 80s. And then I moved up to Sanford, Orlando, and I went to college at a small Baptist college in Georgia, in Decatur, Georgia. And so I picked up a bunch of stuff there as well. So I'm kind of a linguistic chameleon a little bit, you know, like if I go to Wisconsin, like my wife's from Wisconsin. And her dad's, he's real Wisconsin. You know, he talks like, so it don't take me but 3 days to start talking like, you know, a little bit like my father-in-law. You know, I'll talk like this sometimes.
You're such a good guy, Dan. And like that you and I talked about last time that you donated, I think like $5 million to that hospital. Yeah. You know, I mean, what's that?
Yeah, Arnold Palmer Children's Hospital.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you're such a good-hearted guy. And that's why I'm always excited to have you on, because, first of all, it's easy to talk to you. It's not like, you know, this is not like a 60 minutes interview, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we're just kicking back and fucking shooting the shit. But, you know, but it's always fun. Is anything new with cars? Because I know that, like, you know, they have, like, the scary... Halloween's coming, so at Disney, I think they have the scary Cars ride, and it's the scary Mater.
they got the Halloween ride coming up there. The daggum, you know what we did? Well, we just released, John, 2 weekends ago. Cars on the Road came out on Disney Plus, and man, that's really good. It's a 90-minute movie, but it's broke up into 9-10-minute sections.
Nice.
There's 9 little adventures, so it's kind of like a Mater Tales stories from Radiator Springs that we did. So it's just kind of continuation of that. They call it Cars on the Road. I think series one or whatever. Hopefully there'll be another one. Hopefully people really enjoyed it. From what I understand, it's really doing well and people like it. So, You know, that made her character. But, you know, you figure they got a theme park. Cars has a theme park. So if you want to keep fueling the theme park, you better start coming up with some more car stuff. So I think...
which means Dan Whitney never has to do stand up again.
I know, right? Well, I tell you what, though, it's I've enjoyed working for the folks from Pixar, and they're very sweet to me. They're very kind, and I'm just very blessed and honored that they put faith in me to breathe life into that little tow truck. And it's really worked out well for them and me, so.
Yeah, now that's got, I mean, God, I would fucking kill to be a Disney animated character. That's like, just like, I mean, that's like hitting the lottery.
Oh, man, absolutely. It's the craziest thing. I remember when I first got that part in 2002, they sent me a letter and wanted me in, asked me to be, if I wanted to be their little tow truck in their town tow truck. And I remember I called my manager and I go, what is this? What does this mean? When they want you Pixar. I go, you know who Pixar is, right? I said, yeah, I know Pixar, but what's it mean? I mean, they want me to be, well, they want you to be their tow truck. I said, well, where do I got to audition? I mean, do I have to go out there? He's like, no, you got the part. You have it. They like your voice. And I was like, I got the part? Yeah. John, I'm not kidding. I started just tearing up like a little schoolgirl because I was so happy because, you know, I'd been doing Larry the Cable Guy on the radio for 15, how many years? For 15 straight years, 5 days a week, I was doing these commentaries. Maybe even longer than that. It started in 93, 2003. Yeah. So for 10 years, I would say 10 years. For 10 straight years, I did these commentaries every day, up to 20-something radio stations, every day, hoping, you never know, something may happen with this. And not only did I get blue collar out of it, but the voice itself got me the Cars thing. And then when I went out there and did it, it was just fun. And it was a small part to begin with. It was a small part.
Yeah, but it was the most lovable part, you know?
Well, that's the crazy thing. I had maybe 25 lines, and then I didn't hear from them for like 5 months. And I remember I called my manager and I said, hey, whatever happened to that cartoon that I went out and did for Pixar? We haven't heard from them for a half a year. And I said that I suck. Did they fire me? What's going on? And he goes, yeah, let me ask them. Then he calls me back and he goes, you sitting down? I go, I got fired. He goes, no, they like the character so much. They said it brings so much heart to the movie that they're rewriting a lot of the movie and adding more Mater.
That's awesome. Like,
that is so cool. And I went, you know, and I went out, John, I went out and I did. This is how awesome it was. I went out there, you know, you hear so many things about, this is why I don't like to watch the news, because they pit everybody against each other. They pit these people against these people and these people against these people. But you wouldn't think Larry the Cable Guy in San Francisco would get along too good with my views, and right? Let me tell you something.
I bet you know.
They had me come out to Emeryville and the Punchline in San Francisco.
Yeah, I've done it.
They said, since you're coming out here, we'll give you the weekend so you can make some money while you're out here. You might as well do something while you're out here. I said, yeah. So I went out there and I did 4 sold-out shows at the Punchline in San Francisco. The crowds were so good to me. They were so nice to me. Almost all tons of people from Pixar came out to watch me. This was back in like 2003. And man, it was such a great time. And but anyway, I can't say enough good things about the folks at Pixar. And we get along really well. And And you know, the thing, we work good together, and you can tell we're putting out a really good product. I mean, these Cars movies are awesome, and kids love them.
No, I took my kids to them. Yeah, I went on the ride with my kids.
Right. And so we're a good team, man. We're a good team, and we're putting some good stuff together. And you know what?
It was so cool for me to tell my kids, hey, we see Maida. That's my friend Dan Whitney right there.
Yeah.
All right, two more questions, and I'll let you go. First, is there anything that you can tell me that nobody knows about Dan Whitney?
I enjoy singing operatic.
Get the fuck out of here. Really?
You know, it's really funny. You know, I do. I you know, when I was on The Masked Singer, which was hilarious. I went out and I did The Masked Singer, and I don't know if I can sing or not, but when you put this costume on your head, you can't see anybody. Nobody knows it's you. It's a lot easier to sing. And what's really funny, John, in the first round, I won. I made it through the first round. And the girl comes in and said, if you only knew who you eliminated, you would crap your pants. I said, well, who was it? She goes, I can't tell. But when you watch this show, you will crap your pants. I eliminated Toni Braxton. In the first round, I'm not kidding. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And I sang a Barry White song. And so they asked me what I wanted to sing for the second song. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to get any further in the second round. I mean, it was the greatest gig I ever had. I went out to L.A. for 10 days, and I taped 3 days, and I
next
golfed.
Next time you come out here, fucking, you know, fucking hit me up.
And I golfed 5 days. It was, you know, I'm out of L.A. Country Club. I mean, it was the greatest thing ever. So anyway, they said, well, what do you want to sing for your second song? And I wanted to go out with a bang, and I like singing operatic. So I said, you know what? And I did it once on The Tonight Show. I did an Oscar Mayer Wiener song as if Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote the Oscar Mayer Wiener.
Do you remember it?
I do remember it. And I said to them, I said, I want to do a Andrew Lloyd Webber version of the Flintstones. And I did. I sang the Flintstones operatic, and it was one of their... To this day, they tell me they have so many requests on that.
Can I hear it?
Flintstones, meet the Flintstones. They're a modern Stone Age family from the town of Bedrock. They're a place right out of history. Pretty good, right?
Bravo.
Yeah, so I did that on The Masked Singer. But I enjoy that kind of stuff. It's really funny. One time when I was a kid, you remember that commercial? They used to play all the old classics, Tchaikovsky and Beethoven. And they were selling these records. And it was called The Great Masters. And a guy would come in and he would go, that was Tchaikovsky's one. But did you know it was actually called the Polovensium Dance No. 2 by Borodin? You know, I still remember that to this day. Now, that commercial is from the 70s, early 80s. And I remember I went down to I was working a really nice theater, and I can't remember who it was. One of those ones where I always like to say, thanks for having me. It's good to class the place up. You know, these real classy. And they had on, like, Beethoven. It wasn't that, but it was in the theme of that. It was one of the great masters. And I walk in this lady's office she's showing us where stuff is. I walk in there. I hear this music on. And I go, hey, wait a second. And she goes, what? I go, that's the Polovensium Dance No. 2 by Borodin. Just kidding around. And she goes, oh my gosh. That is so good. You know this music? That's impressive. And I said, well, I only know that from the commercial. But it, for a second there, she thought I knew everything about the great masters.
Hey, Dan, I'll tell you something. If you want to hear a great opera, well, opera-esque duet, it's Pavarotti, Eric Clapton doing Holy Mother.
Really?
Yeah, just YouTube it after we're done. Pavarotti, Eric Clapton, it'll bring tears to your eyes. It's so beautiful.
Man, I'll check that out. Yeah, I'll check it out. You know, the only Broadway show I ever went to where I got to see some cool stuff like that was I went to the Monty Python thing in New York, which was awesome. Yeah. I love that. I always wanted to do this. I thought it would be such a good moneymaker that I wanted to have like one small singing part in a opera somewhere in New York. And it was, they would name the name of the opera featuring Larry the Cable Guy and just come out, and just come out totally out of character and just, I was on the hillside. You know, I just thought that would be so stinking fun. I'll tell you what else that I think is a great idea, and they're missing out on a great investment opportunity to sell their product. But I always thought, remember when they were having, what's his name, do all the DirecTV commercials? What was his name?
Samuel L. Jackson?
No, I can't remember who it was. Anyway, one of the Rat Pack guys. The real good-looking Rat Pack guy from back in the day.
Dean Martin? I mean...
No, the kid. The kid, not the young Rat Pack. The Brat
Pack. Oh. Brat.
Oh, remember, you know who I'm talking about. He was in Don't You Forget About Me. He was in that movie.
Yeah, Judd Nelson? Or...
Yeah, but no, anyway.
No, hold on. Anthony Michael Hall, Judd Nelson... And, and Emilio Estevez.
No. Okay, maybe I'm thinking of the wrong movie then. But he was in the movie
That was Class. The Brat Pack, by the way.
Oh, the Brat Pack. The movie Class. Remember the movie Class?
Yeah.
Okay, that what was the...
McCarthy, something.
But who was the other guy?
The other guy was Rob Lowe.
Rob Lowe. He did the DirecTV commercials. Ah. Oh my gosh! You can tell we're getting older, John. We can't remember anybody. But I always thought, what a moneymaker! DirecTV should get me to do their commercials. Larry the Cable Guy has switched to DirecTV. And then I would tour as Larry the DirecTV guy. Yeah, people are missing out.
Did you suggest that to them?
I did. Nothing. They're idiots.
All right, last question, Dick.
Evidently, that's another thing that's always funny. Guys like me are too controversial now to do because of our comedy. You know, we're not woke.
Oh,
so we're too controversial to do commercials for mainstream. Meanwhile, you got what's his name doing all kinds of commercials. The rapper, what's his name?
Oh, Snoop Dogg.
You got Snoop Dogg doing every day.
He's a gangster.
It's like holy mackerel.
So, Dan, last question, I'll let you go.
I remember he did an interview one time, and the lady goes, now that you're doing mainstream commercials and you're more mainstream, do you regret some of the lyrics, some of the misogynistic lyrics to your music? And he said, no, man, F them hoes. They was all hoes. And I'm like, going, if anybody else did that, they're never working again.
Yes.
But he said that, and he got a Coca-Cola commercial. The worse he gets, the more commercial. You got, hey, more power to him. More power to him. But it's like, wait a second. You know, if anybody else did that, they wouldn't be getting no commercial. I guarantee you that much.
Dan, last question I got to ask, because I have a lot of golf fans that I hang out with. And when I said I was having you on, they're like, oh, I love watching him when he's playing golf. Are you a good golfer?
You know what? I'm getting better. I went today. I always play I was playing an old pro down here. His name's Charlie. He's 75, but he used to be one of the greatest in the Midwest. And he beats me all the time. But I went today. I played him today. I came straight here from that. And I shot 2 over par on the front nine today. And I finally beat Charlie in match play 3-2. But you know what?
Wow.
I'm getting better. I'm about a 13 handicap. I shot a 77 2 weeks ago. I'm not shooting in the 90s anymore. I'm shooting in the mid 80s.
When you say that you won 2 out of 3, is that 18 holes or 9?
No, me and Charlie, we play just 9-hole match play.
Oh, nice.
So I was up by 3 holes with 2 to go. So I won 3-2. So, you know what? I'm getting better. I love golf. Golf is something that you can play when you get older. You know, I love baseball, but I can't, you know, the last time I tried to swing a bat, I felt like my colon was going to come out of my butthole. So I couldn't do that. I hurt myself. I can't get down on a ground ball as good as I used to, but I love, can't run like I used to, but golf, I can golf. I can walk a golf course and I can hit a golf ball. So, I love it. And it's good to get out and just breathe good air and get out in the sunshine and keeps you in shape. And you meet a lot of really cool people. And I love it. That's what I'm telling my kid. I tell my kid all the time, I go, why don't you, when you get a job, what your first job should be, all kids should do it. Well, your first job should be is trying to get a job as a cart kid at a golf course, cleaning the carts and taking bags from people, because you meet so many people there that have their own businesses, yep. They're successful people. And a lot of them like hiring people that are outgoing and good with people and smart and hard workers, man, if you got a job at a golf course and worked hard, man, the opportunities are endless. The people that you would meet and the opportunities that you would get. But anyway, I love golfing. It's a lot of fun. I never thought I'd ever like golf. I always thought they were all a bunch of snobs, but it's kind of changing a little bit right now. There's a lot of people that golf that you never ever thought would golf, but I love it. I love those pro-ams. I love hanging out with the crowds, and they're just fun. Golf's fun.
Well, listen, Dan, you know, I love you. If you ever come out again to LA, you know, ask Maggie to get, you know, and I'll fucking come and we'll have a few beers.
All right. Sounds good. If I ever get out there again, I'll do my best. I know I'll be at some casinos every now and then out there. I don't know how often I'll get to Los Angeles, but I'll definitely give you a holler, John. Same here, man. You ever in the Midwest, give me a holler.
No, I will. Hey, is there anything that you want to plug before we go?
No, just, you know what? If they want to check out the new Cars on the Road, that's on Disney Plus. That's out now. It's awesome. And on Sirius XM, Jeff and I have our own station on there called Jeff and Larry's Comedy Roundup. I do my own show for 2 hours on Friday.
So you see those guys still?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I still, Jeff and I, man, Jeff's been one of my best friends since 1986.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I don't see Bill or Jeff. I don't see Bill and Ron very much. We communicate over text messages, but, you know, we're all doing so many different things. But yeah. I love the guys, man. We all love each other. So, we're all buddies. There's nothing going on bad.
Dan, thank you so much. I love you. Please give my best to your wife and kids. And, you know, I hope to see you soon. I hope to have you on, but I won't bother you for another year.
Nah, you're good, man. You ever need anything else, just let me know. You know I love you, John. You've always been good to me. And you were one of the reasons I always did good on The Tonight Show, because I just felt like I was at home. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Dan. I'll see you later.
You got to get her done.
The great Dan Whitney, a.k.a. Larry the Cable Guy. I hope you guys enjoyed this very special beer on the balcony. You know, I'm touched when Dan comes on. I mean, I mean, shit, man. The guy's awesome. Just totally awesome. And he's such a good guy, down to earth, just like his wife, Kara. And, you know, I love just talking to people that are kind. You know what I mean? So I hope you enjoyed this one. And now I'm going to go watch the Yankees, all right? I got to make a bet on Aaron Judge home runs. This is Stuttering John saying, Gay Lager.